All right, well, welcome back to everyone to our podcast here at VSU. The Undergraduate Research Council has been working on allowing people to talk about their research to a broader audience and giving us some indications on how they research and what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy. And we've already had several guests, and tonight's guest, we have Dr. Thomas Manning, professor at VSU. He has a BS in chemistry from College of Charleston, an MS in chemistry from the University of Florida. His PhD is also in chemistry from the University of Florida. And he teaches a great many of our chemistry classes, including instrumental analysis, environmental chemistry, physical chemistry, marine chemistry, and research. His primary research interests are drug development related to cancer, bacterial, viral infections, and neurological diseases. In fact, his undergraduate students have 20 novel complexes that have entered the preclinical trial at the National Cancer Institute, and developed a patented drug that works against multi-drug resilient tuberculosis, and has recently published novel treatments of COVID-19. So he's active in many projects as well down in the Florida Keys in the oyster and coral restoration. We've had at our symposium every year the wonderful opportunity to hear how all these are going, and I know he has some other projects. So I'd like to welcome you, Dr. Manning, tonight, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Well, I want to start off, and I've given you a list of questions. I would like you to sort of tell our listeners what types of research. I mentioned some, but I know you've been involved in other types of research. So I was wondering if you'd sort of give an idea of what you've been involved in, and maybe what is your favorite research project?
Okay, so my research program is kind of tailored to undergraduate students. We don't have students that can work 60 hours a week. We don't have massive resources like a large PhD granting school have. So we kind of oriented our approach to being, if we can come up with something like, for example, a new drug, and we can make it here and it works really well, that's actually an advantage over being at a big school, because everything we do has to be relatively simple, relatively safe to work with, and fairly easy to figure out what we have. That's because the undergraduates might only be able to work 15 hours a week. So what might be considered a disadvantage, we've tried to turn into an advantage by focusing on, whether we're synthesizing a cancer drug or an antibiotic or doing, coral restoration in the ocean, is to avoid too much technology and coming up with kind of a better mousetrap. So that's our general philosophy with all our projects. The things that we have going, we've developed a number of cancer drugs, a number of antibiotics, and we've been working with a drug from the sea called Briostatin on its synthesis, developing a new way to synthesize the molecule. And then we also have coral and oyster restoration, but they involve a lot of waiting. So we put something out in the ocean and we wait 6 months. We go back and see what's there. And then we're always publishing new stuff in terms of chemical education, developing new things, new projects that students are working on in terms of, new ways of teaching, new experiments to do, things of that nature. If you ask me what my favorite one is, I'd have to say anything that's successful is my favorite. And anything that fails is not my favorite. But, because when you do this, there's no guarantee. If we say, hey, let's try a drug, and we submit it to the National Cancer Institute and they turn it down, we may have learned something from it, but there's still that day of heartbreak there. But if it gets accepted, there's that day of, yay, we did something good. So there's that human part of it. But I would have to say we definitely focus a lot on pharmaceuticals because our students, many of our students are pre-med, pre-dent, pre-pharmacy. Or they want to go to graduate school in chemistry, and many of them end up going into something medicinally related. So it's kind of a good area to be in terms of mentoring students. But I'd probably say the one that I've worked on the longest is Briostatin. It's a drug that we're producing in the ocean using bacteria, as opposed to an ultra high tech, very sophisticated method that a large university may use. But their method would end up being far more expensive than ours. And ours also focuses on green technology. A lot of things that we do, emphasize the green aspect of it, that it's safe, it's economical, students can work with it. So I would say that the best one is usually when I have three or four students that are interested in a project, that we have one coming up this semester, and then everybody gets involved as a team. And I usually like that team concept, that makes it as exciting as the actual content of the project.
Well, I know that I've talked to several of your students, and they are always having so much fun while doing really important work. And I think it surprises other students, like at the symposium, when we see your students working on these very sophisticated projects and getting patents and getting, recognized in publications and finding out that college students really can do this. So I always enjoy your presentations. On your personal history of research, has there been something, I think you and I were talking about one of the Alzheimer's drugs or a possibility there. Has that been part of what you've worked on with students, or has that just been mostly what you've worked on?
No, I mean, I'm the rope that runs through years and years and years of student projects. But if I don't have students there with me, I have a tendency to kind of slack off a little bit, maybe do a little bit less. But if someone's at the door and they say, hey, what are we doing today? Then we have a tendency to get more stuff done. This semester, with the students that are working on that particular project, we're going to try to enter a couple of business plan competitions where we have our method of synthesis, which takes place in the ocean, and we're trying to turn it into a business model. We've done that in the past. We've made it to the finals of four national competitions. We were in each case the only undergraduate group there. Everybody else was graduate groups. Two of them were up in Washington, D.C. with the National Science Foundation. We go in front of these panels to raise money, basically. Although just doing it is an incredible experience for the students, going through this process of trying to commercialize your research, and you get reality hit you in the face that there's not someone waiting right outside your door for your idea. You have to go out and adapt it to the market and adapt it to economics and adapt it to a problem that you want to solve. And it kind of brings the real world into what you do. And students always come out of that blending of science and business for the better. And it's something that, like in a classroom, you don't even think about, right? It's not even on the agenda when you're taking a chemistry class. So there's things like that you can get the students excited with really off-key ideas and projects just because it's so much different than anything they've done before. This past spring and summer with COVID, we've been doing work with tuberculosis, right? And tuberculosis strikes 2 billion people on the planet right now with TB. So it's not an American disease, so you don't hear much about it. But it's a terrible disease, and it kills 2 million people a year. So we were working on drugs for that for several years, and it's a pulmonary disease. So we were working on ways to get the drug deep into the lungs. And so when COVID came, it's a viral disease that's also deep within the lung. And the students that work with me, we started in March, and all through August, we were here, with the whole building was empty. We were here 8, 10, 12 hours a day doing stuff, getting stuff done. We had papers out. We put together videos to show agencies and companies what we were doing. And I can tell you this. I told the students, I said, you'll remember this for the rest of your life. Other kids will brag about that they saw all the movies on Netflix during the pandemic. I said, that will wear off pretty quick. But when you guys are 40 years old, I said, you look back at the papers you published, and it's in very good journals. I said, you were part of the solution. I said, you'll have a much greater appreciation of that. So there's things like that pop up, and you try to seize the moment, although COVID is obviously unique. But you try to do a project where it energizes people. It's not kind of a pointless project, so people see why it's important to work on, as opposed to let's go outside and count how many blades of grass are in the front lawn. People say, why do we do that? And it's like, well, no one's ever done it, it's kind of a hard sell. But if you're doing something that, say, cancer or antibiotics, people understand it immediately.
Yeah, I thought when I heard that you all were working on COVID over the summer, I was fascinated first on how quickly you were able to sort of move from one direction in TB over to COVID. But also I thought, what a wonderful example for our students of how to deal with these sorts of difficult times that come up, because being older, and I'm probably much older than you, you run into these times in your life where things seem very out of control. But if you're able to sort of get past that and move on to something purposeful, that seems to me learning more than just about chemistry, learning how to sell it, learning how to deal with the corporations, but also learning about yourself in these difficult times. How did your students react? Were they having fun? Were they nervous or about coming in?
Well, I'll say this. One is, there's always, you have to have chemistry there with people, obviously, right? And that's one of those hard to define things, but you know it's there or you know it's not there. And so the two alpha students that were with me, they had been involved with me on several other projects. So they kind of knew my style and I knew their strengths and weaknesses. So I customize it, right? So you always try to, I always try to put a student in a position where they're going to be successful. I mean, they may still make mistakes and they may have to fight through things, but I'm not going to take the shortest guy in the class and make him play LeBron James of basketball and then chastise him for not beating him. You put him in a position, so you put him in a position where they can be successful and they can contribute. And so they had been on, like, for example, they've been on camping trips with me where we spent a week, out camping, in Florida Keys. You really get to know each other and, you do a lot of stuff together. And so there was that. And I think for them, because there's reinforcement from me and reinforcement from the news, but it's also they go home and they talk to their families and they say, hey, guess what I'm doing? And their families give them a lot of support. And I don't know what conversations take place, but I'm guessing mom and dad and grandma and grandpa are saying, wow, that's a great thing to work on. You really need to do that. And so you can see the next day when they come in even more energized. It's, conversations that they had with people. And I think that's an important part of it, too, is they see what they're doing is worthwhile. And then suddenly, the morale goes up a little bit. And they were there all the time. If I said, hey, we have to be there at 7 a.m, they were waiting at the side door for me to open the door. And it was day in, and we'd work on stuff at night, communicate with each other, get spreadsheets together. And it was really kind of exciting. The first paper we submitted it to a top international pharmaceutical journal. And I told them, I said, there's about a 5% chance this is going to get accepted, but let's give it a shot. 11 days later, we got the email back from the editor. It got accepted and it was the feature article.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so for them, for me, I understood it at a deeper level than they did. But they still thought it was really neat, that they got their name on something and show it to their parents and, had COVID in the title. And then obviously when they apply to med school or something like that, I tell them, I said, this will count for more than you think. In adult world, telling them that you worked, cleaning up the road with a fraternity, it's okay. I said, but if you're talking to these people about stuff they do and you're interested in it, they'll like you a lot more. So there's things like that, where they hang with me and I hang with them. I feed off their youthful energy and their enthusiasm. And I'm the old guy that has, I know the routine. I know what we have to do. I'm going to push them through it. So it ends up blending pretty well together. And things in that case, really worked out. And we've had other instances like that, where the chemistry is just right. And everybody kind of chips in, and whether it takes 6 months or a year, we got a TB patent that got stretched over 4 years. And there were two students, Sydney Plummer and Tess Baker, that worked with me on that. And I can say without them, I never would have finished it, because they were kind of like, got to get it done. You know, they were almost like, I felt like it was a little kid sometimes. They were like, Dr. Madden, got to get this done. You need to shut off football on your computer and want, you know, do work on this, you know? So, and so it was a good balance with things balanced out. So just like now with this past summer with Janu and Matt, you know, the chemistry was good. And we kind of, you know, everyone has their strengths. Everyone has their weaknesses. And we kind of, everybody raised up, you know, in a situation.
Yeah, I have to say that that's the part of working with students that I love is just when it's less professor-student and more group-oriented, and there's so much that comes out of it and so much that I get out of it, learning from them, learning new things all the time, things that I hadn't thought of. And I know, like I said, in having some of your students in my classes, they're always talking about what they do, and students outside of your field are just amazed that they could be doing things like this. So I'm hoping that with our new experiential learning efforts, that more of this kind of educational orientation takes place on a larger scale. Because I think our students could do amazing things if they just knew how to go about it.
I agree. And I'll say this, that I've been at, you know, at national competitions, you know, up in Washington with undergraduates from VSU, and we went head to head with graduate students from Princeton, Michigan, Texas, UCLA, and we were in a running to get money. I mean, we've pulled in venture capital from big venture capitalists. You know, and a lot of the things that happened surprised them. But I told them, I said, you know, if we have a good idea and we follow through on it and we adjust, I said, you can be competitive. I said, it's more, you have to learn the process of how you do this. That's, I mean, good education is about hard work, but also having good ideas and getting rid of the bad ones. And I said, you can be competitive. I said, you know, so if the motivation's there and my idea happens to work out, then, you know, we're kind of a match made in heaven.
Yeah, and I would imagine that for future employers or future graduate schools, the very fact that they do come from a school that doesn't have the multi-million dollar labs, but manages to get the results you're getting, has to be incredibly impressive. I mean, I would think that that would be a major benefit to getting into other programs.
Yeah, when we just last year, we had a young woman. She did a business plan competition up in Atlanta, and it was mostly Georgia Tech and Georgia State graduate students. And it was actually two of them, Marcus and Olivia. And they made it to the finals. And there were people that came up after they went through their final business pitch. They said, you're probably going to win. You're probably going to win. And I was still a little hesitant because some of those 33-year-old graduate students kind of looked like IBM employees to me, whereas my students looked like college kids. And so even though we had a really good pitch, you know, the two of them that looked like IBM, they already been working at IBM for 10 years. I said, you know, that's a little tough to kind of, you know, say no to. But the flip side was, is we were in a hunt, and that's all I can ask really, is that we were competing, and they competed well, you know. So but she ended up going to Yale. She got into a PhD program at Yale, and Marcus got into a PhD program at University of Tennessee. And I guarantee you at Yale, because I got a call from them. But I guarantee you that, you know, if she just had grades, she probably would not have been considered, because those schools have such a narrow margin of who gets in. You know, it's like 5 or 10% of the applicants get in. And so doing a business plan competition, you know, working on a patent, we had a congressman that came here, Congressman Carter, and our class, the students that were working on that project, gave a pitch to a congressman in a lab that we were working in. And, you know, it ended up lasting a couple of hours. That really made her stand out, and it gave her education at VSU kind of credibility. So, you know, and something that someone up in New Haven, Connecticut could embrace. So there's a lot of things that come out of it for different people. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm always surprised in some ways at how our school and maybe students don't understand how well VSU educates people and where these people end up. We had a student in my department that ended up at Notre Dame. I told her to, only three people got accepted every year into that program, and she wanted it. And I said, go try for it. And I was worried, you know, because only three people. And you expect them to be from Stanford or Yale or something to go to Notre Dame. And not only did she get in, she got a full ride. So you just never know. And I think sometimes our students underestimate themselves as to what they could do. And so projects like this, or I love hearing about the one down in the Keys every year. The students going down there, they have so much fun and they learn so much. And then a group of them, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they take their work and turn it into murals?
Yeah, we were doing artwork from some of the invertebrate stuff we did down in the Keys. And I'll give you a kind of a different scan on that. We go down to the Keys and we camp out. We spend a week, 9 days in tents. So we also go out in boats on coral reefs. And so for a lot of the kids that go along with us, it's the first time they've been in the ocean, first time they've been on a boat in the ocean, first time they've been on a coral reef. And so while that's not, you know, earth-shattering research, you know, that's a life experience that for a lot of them opens up new doors. They start thinking about, you know, maybe I want to go to graduate school in this area, or even something as simple as, you know, maybe I'll start going to vacation, you know, maybe I'll start going on a vacation at the beach over in, you know, Jekyll Island or something. But there's a lot of life experiences that come out of, you know, whether we're doing artistic work. We did work, and if you come up to the third floor, we probably have about 40 murals up. And I say murals, 3x3 large posters that we had printed out by a specialty company of invertebrate life that the students took down in the Keys. And they did this as a kind of a conservation type thing, because you usually see pictures of dolphins and whales and, you know, things like that.
Right.
And they focused on a lot of the little things that are really neat to look at, have a lot of color, a lot of symmetry. And you've probably never seen half of them before. Just kind of walking down the beach. We had to dig through, you know, we had to spend time in the water to find a lot of these things. So that was part of an exploratory project, you know, a little bit different than your normal, you know, science type stuff. It was like an art science type thing.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was wonderful. We saw it at undergraduate research, and I was just fascinated. And the idea that they were doing more than that. And I'll tell you, I've got a 5-year-old grandson who, he likes art and he likes science, and I got the idea from you all to get him one of those microscopes so that he could look at little things, whatever he wants to look at, and then draw them as well. So, you know, that's the kind of ideas that I think a lot of your projects spawn that you are probably not aware of. We can't do that.
Do that. What the big thing that, like, I bring the kids to the beach, and they all have cameras now, obviously. And we go out and say, okay, we're going to be on the beach for 5 hours, and you have to do this picture taking, is that it forces them to stop and look, right? And they start looking at things that are smaller and smaller. And that's just, and you get so much more out of life. It doesn't matter whether you're at a beach or you're walking down a street in New York City. If you stop and look, and you look around you a little bit, and you probe a little bit, you pick things up rather than just letting things pass you by. And so they find all sorts of neat little critters, you know, that are colorful. But it's the first time for most of them, even the ones that have grown up on beaches, where they stopped and they spent 3 hours in a little tidal pool. And they realize, gosh, there's like 30 different living things in here. So just from a curiosity point of view, it really stroked that, you know, and it's kind of one of those, you know, you don't always have to memorize stuff to learn something. You can go out and do something and learn quite a bit too.
Yeah, and maybe even more. I mean, I think it's a perfect way to reinforce what you do learn in the classroom, to get out there and see it. I do have a question for you, though. And I've been asking this of people. What is your favorite and least favorite part of research? Like, for me, I really love the research. I don't mind the writing, but editing, boy, that just drives me crazy sometimes, learning where those commas have to go for different APA or whichever style. So what are your favorite and least favorite parts of research?
Well, I would say that the favorite part is the process of discovery or doing something new. Even if there's failure, I still like it. I would say the least favorite part might be, Well, if a very specific thing might be what you just said is getting references in the right order. If I have like 80 references, you know, and I'm like, geez, I'll do that Saturday morning, then I'll do it Monday. I'll do it, you know, it's like one of those. It just built up in me over time. I hate doing that. I like writing a paper. I don't like the reference part, but that's the nature of the beast. And then it's just some of the logistics that go along with students. You know, it might be, okay, we're going to the beach and I have to find how we're going to get there, how we're going to get back, who's going to pay for it. And that stuff can be, I mean, it's expected and, you know, it's always going to be there, but just that kind of logistical stuff, you know, we have to start dealing with, you know, where are we going to get this from? Where are we going to get that from? That kind of can wear you out a little bit here and there.
Yeah, I imagine, especially since if you're trying to supplement what the students are paying, so they're not paying the whole thing. Imagine that. So just out of curiosity, do you have your own tents or do the students have to bring theirs?
Well, when we go down to the Keys, for example, sometimes I have money and I can like pay for the campsite and we'll go in somewhere like the Hemingway House or, you know, there's a Turtle Hospital down there, places like that. I can pay the admission out of things. But I always, things that they might destroy, like a tent or a sleeping bag, I just tell them, you guys have, you talk to your family. I said, you have a crazy Uncle Joe out there somewhere, that has three tents in his closet because he's going to move to the woods when the earth comes to an end. And I said, you could probably borrow from them. And I usually, once they start scrounging around within family, you know, they find them pretty quick. But that usually ends up being a big adventure. That's part of it. You know, and a lot of times I get positive feedback, even from parents, to like, I'm glad my kid's outside. I'm glad my kid's camping. I'm glad my kid's going out on a boat. You know, I mean, it's, they like the adventure part of it. The parents, that they're not going home for spring break, watching screens or hanging out with their old friends or something, that they're doing right. Something completely new. So
that is wonderful. Well, we're getting towards, the end. And before I ask you the last question, I do want to say thank you so much for being willing to do this and all your work with the undergraduates. A lot of it, until I became involved in the undergraduate research and started that, I don't know, years and years ago, I didn't know what was going on in the sciences. And when we took the undergraduate research university-wide, it was one of the best things about it is finding out all these different things that the departments are doing. So I appreciate your support of the students and everything you've done to increase research on our campus. But my last question is, what advice would you want to give to students about research, any aspect of research?
I think sometimes people use that word research and it becomes compartmentalized. In terms of like being this narrow experience, I think research, you should view it as you're becoming a professional. And it's not, you're not going to spend the rest of your life memorizing PowerPoint slides. So like if students are doing a business plan and a research project with me, this is what you do if you work for a small company, right? This is what you do if you're in a big research lab. I said, this is, no one's going to hire you to sit in a classroom and, you know, read a PowerPoint slide and then, you know, come back 2 days later and write it down on a piece of paper. I said, you have to get in the habit of doing stuff. You have to experience failure. You have to hopefully experience some success. You have to get along with everybody. And, you know, it kind of brings together just a lot of things that you need to have a successful organization in anything. Right. I mean, it doesn't matter what you're doing. A lot of those attributes come out in a research project or an apprenticeship. I like to think of it more as an apprenticeship because they're doing it with me. I don't give them something and say, come back to me in 2 weeks. I mean, they're in a lab with me and we're doing stuff and they're learning. That's the best way to learn, I think. You can't do it with 300 students, obviously, you know, but when kids become juniors and seniors and that, you know, your major kind of narrows down, it can be a fantastic life, a life-changing experience for a lot of them.
I appreciate you taking the time. And is there anything you'd like to add before we sign off tonight?
Well, if I was talking to students, I would tell them, you know, if the opportunity presents itself, take it, run with it. Whether you're, you know, working with a professor on writing a novel or you're going to develop a new piece of music for the trombone or, you know, you want to open a small business up in the College of Business and learn how to do that. I mean, they're formative experiences that's above and beyond the normal mode of education that they've had, you know, since kindergarten. It's just completely different. I would say just really go for it, you know, throw your heart into it and see how it turns out.
I think that's great advice. And I think that you and I have actually shared some students that have been joint philosophy chemistry students, which I always thought was a wonderful combination to do something so different. And the students that we've shared, I think, have always had such a unique way of bringing these things together. So yeah, trying new things, going after it, I think is great.
It's the spice of life, I guess you'd
say.
Yeah,
I think so. Well, I know that you are incredibly busy with everything, and I want to let you go. But I've enjoyed visiting with you, and I always enjoy working with you. And hopefully we'll get some philosophy and chemistry, I don't know, interesting projects going.
Sure. Always looking for a new project. And thank you very much for having me and letting me ramble on a little bit about what we do.
Oh, no rambling. It was wonderful to hear. All right. Well, you have a good evening. And to everyone who's listening, we hope to have you back again soon. Thank you for tuning in.